Hello and welcome to the Libertarian Podcast. I'm your host, Troy Sinek, joined as always by the Libertarian himself, Professor Richard Epstein, Senior Fellow at the Hoover Institution, as well as Professor of Law at NYU and Senior Lecturer at the University of Chicago. Today, the Mueller Report. And Richard, our long national nightmare is over. The Mueller Report is done and dusted. We've yet to see it. But what we have seen is a summary document from William Barr, the Attorney General, and that indicates that the investigation found no evidence of collusion between the Trump campaign and the Russian government. Now, what it did not provide a definitive conclusion on was the question of whether the president or others in the administration had committed obstruction of justice. The document itself says that it neither concludes that the president committed a crime nor exonerates him. Now, that has been criticized in some quarters as a punt, a sort of dereliction of duty for the investigation not to have answered that question. How do you react to it?
I agree with the critics. There are two vast differences that we have to worry about. The first one is if you're looking at the Russia situation, you have a huge time frame, multiple actors, all sorts of crazy interactions, and lots of things that were not in the public record before it began. So when you've done a survey of that particular stuff and come up with the conclusion that there are no viable charges against the president, you are really dealing with information that has not been fully canvassed somewhere else. The obstruction charges, as best I can tell, are based on one or two incidents, each involving one or two or three people. The entire time of the whole stuff is probably 30 or 40 minutes at most. And all of that information has been in the public record for a very long time. I regard the basis of obstruction in that particular case as preposterous. If it turns out that the president has obstructed justice with either Flynn or with Comey or somebody else, then Barack Obama probably obstructed justice 1,000 times when he announced that he didn't think there was any reason to prosecute Hillary Clinton, given the fact that that could be treated as a signal to his attorney general to back off of that particular case. So I just don't see anything whatsoever about this particular case which leads that way. What Barr said was that it's insufficient to prosecute. That could mean it's either totally worthless or it could be, oh, maybe beyond a reasonable doubt, rather beyond a preponderance of evidence, but not by a reasonable doubt. I don't believe there's anything like that. This is a case in which it's straight up. You know what happened. It's all been out there. They should have reached a conclusion. The New York Times moaned about all of this when it said, how could he dare make his judgment, Mr. Barr, after only having the thing for 48 hours? Well, you only had the report for 48 hours, but you had the information on all of this stuff for the better part of 2 years. And if you're going to start with obstruction, you have to figure out what these key elements of that particular offense are going to be. First of all, you have to have some kind of mental element that it has to be done corruptly, which means that there has to be something to hide, or you have to think that there's something that you're going to have to hide, or you're going to play bad games, and then you actually have to obstruct. Obstruct is a statutory term. It has clear meanings and it has ambiguous ones. So the clear case of obstruction is if the president destroys some evidence that was otherwise available to the attorney general so he could not complete his investigation. Nobody makes any particular charges of that. Or it could be that what the president did was to supply false information to Comey or on either the Flynn or the Comey himself investigation about Flynn, and that would then send him down a goose case. So if you want to find a textbook version of corruption in this particular situation, they're awesome. But they're all having to do with the reports that were filed in connection with the Steele dossier. In my judgment, it is obstruction of justice to file papers with the FISA court that you know to be erroneous, because what it does is throws them off the track and slows things down and leads to investigations that do not take place. And anybody who knew that that information was false, and that includes Mr. Comey and some of his assistants, and signed onto those warrants, seems to me to be facing a serious obstruction charge. Well, then, of course, there's the question of how it is that they began the objection or the investigation. And in this particular case, Comey did not give his own direct report. He found a professor friend at Columbia who gave the information and that triggered it. Well, when you change the identity of the source, what you're doing is you're substituting either anonymous or credible things for somebody who's very much in doubt. And if you, in fact, start an investigation with this third person, which you would never start if Comey had submitted the documents directly, then he is obstructed justice as well. So the real problem for the Democrats is they have to give a definition of obstruction. that captures only the president and doesn't capture any major Democratic activity. I might add, same problem with respect to the investigations of Hillary back in 2015, when she destroyed the various records saying, oh, they only had to do with my wedding. That's obstruction of justice. Somebody else has to look at those records and decide whether they are or not to be privileged. Are they going to prosecute her for that, or is it just a statute of limitation? So what the president did was child's play compared to that, and also he has a defense that the others do not have. As president, he is in fact running a unitary executive, and he has the absolute power to fire his attorney general or his FBI chief. All of the cases that I'm talking about are not situations where the people had a prerogative to do something. Nobody has the prerogative to file false evidence. Nobody has a prerogative to destroy potential evidence. Nobody has a prerogative to mislead other public bodies. So the Democrats are in this very strange position of, see, if they use a broad definition of obstruction, they won't catch the president, but they will catch many in their own parties. Why they want the disclosure of this information is obviously to make sure that what you said, Troy, is wrong, i.e. that the issue has not come to an end, that we go to round two, round three, round four. What I don't think they appreciate is they are putting themselves at mortal risk for a serious investigation and potential criminal prosecution. And remember, at this particular point, it's not a compromised Jeff Sessions, who's the attorney general. It's a relatively liberated Bill Barr, who holds that office.
I want to stay on that point about the disclosure, because a lot of Democrats on Capitol Hill, most of whom are obviously hoping for something that did more damage to the president here, have been publicly clamoring for the full report to be made public. And the Justice Department indicated in Barr's letter that they're currently reviewing to make a decision about what they think can or can't be made public. But Richard, this is one of those circumstances where we're going to hear a lot in the intervening days about the public's right to know. That's going to be invoked with some regularity. Is there such a thing? I mean, obviously, you don't know the details, but on a principles level, where should we draw the line about what should and shouldn't become public knowledge?
The public surely has a right to know, except for that particular information, which is supposed to be confidential. So to give you the most recent illustration of a report that was not made public, you recall that the FBI did a hurry-up investigation of the allegations that were raised against Brett Kavanaugh for sexual irregularities. Each member of the Senate Judiciary Committee was allowed to go in and see the document, but were not allowed to comment on it at any later time than that, and nobody said that those particular procedures were untoward. So the question is, why do you do it under these circumstances? Well, that's an extremely explosive sexual case, and it turns out that there may be many people who were mentioned in that report who did nothing wrong, and the great fear that you have is that if you release the public document, innocent people will be brought down with guilty people, because the public will not be able to make sufficient discriminations as to which guys are this and which guys are that, and so everybody gets tarred with the same brush. That's the kind of concern that you have in this particular case. I have not seen the report, and so I don't know whether or not there are people who have been maligned in the press who were exonerated after a detailed investigation. But suppose a detailed investigation says Miss X was not engaged in any collusion with the Russians, but she was cheating on her husband. Well, do you want to reveal that particular piece of information and wreck a marriage, perhaps? Or maybe the husband already knows that she was cheating on him and he's willing to exonerate, but then it becomes public and the pressure on the marriage from all sorts of third parties becomes intolerable. So those sorts of considerations are very, very much part and parcel of the overall picture. Now, you can say, in the grand scheme of things, a mere little trifle affair should not stand in the way of affairs of state. But if you got 20, 30, or 40 of them, and if the revelations of those particular elements are, in fact, damning to these people, you should at least ask the question, do they help you with the investigation? So then the next possibility, you say, redaction. What we do is we publish some stuff and we don't publish others. And if you go back and look at the various reports that have been made in connection with this investigation by the House and the Senate when the Republicans were in control of both, there were published documents and there were all sorts of black lines through things that redacted the situation. Redaction sometimes is very trustworthy. Other times it can be thought to saying you're redacting the stuff that really matters and leaving the stuff that really doesn't matter. And so the selectivity is itself another source of attack, which the Democrats are sure to make. And then, of course, you could release nothing whatsoever, at which point one would say, why are you possibly doing that? You've just given us the summaries. And we say, we don't think redaction is possible. As an outsider, it's extremely difficult to figure out which of these particular positions is the correct one. But as I've mentioned, we've already had illustrations of complete confidentiality and redaction, as well as cases of complete release. And so at this particular point, it doesn't strike me that the public has a right to know is enough to handle the question unless you have some knowledge of the information. Now, if I were Barr and if I were running this investigation and I said I wanted to release relatively little information, what would happen under the circumstances, I would probably find one or two credible people from the opposite party who would be prepared to testify upon a review of the information under conditions of confidentiality, that they've examined these documents and all of the stuff that was redacted is in fact perfectly legitimate for the government to redact. And that might help ease the particular pain. But I regard this at this particular point as more political struggle. The defendants, the Democrats, have suffered a very stinging defeat under these circumstances. They were basically screaming for blood and sure that they have it. They get a flat no on one thing and an evasive maybe yes on the other thing. So they're not going to stop. I don't think they realize, and I regard them as being quite short-sighted, that indignation should not blind them to the fact that if they really want to push further on this stuff, the information that they get may well come out to hurt more them than the other side.
Richard, the president said recently that we have to make sure that this never, ever happens to another president again. That's a slightly different note than we heard during the investigation, where he was really portraying himself as the victim of what he so often called a witch hunt. But this is actually Trump defending the presidency as an institution, saying it was sort of improperly imperiled here. How does that square with your reading of the situation?
Well, I agree with him 100% on this one. I think the presidency was impaired. I think that notwithstanding the exoneration, that the entire calling together of this particular report was based on bad information. I thought it was wrong to pick Robert Mueller to do this. I think Robert Mueller was wrong, for example, when he fired various people like Strotz from the investigation, that he kept all their information when he went further. I think Mueller was wrong when he managed to string this thing out for 2 years, when after 6 months I was prepared to say and said multiple times he doesn't have a thing to go on in this particular case, and that just prolonged the agony. I think what the president was surprised about was the fact that Mueller did not essentially cave and make preposterous allegations as part of the report, which is all to his particular credit. I mean, we ought to be extremely thankful to him for that. But I don't think that this essentially cures the overall situation. There's going to be further charges, as have already been made, that you never put the president under oath, you didn't get him to give a deposition and so forth. I regard a deposition of a sitting president as an absolute time bomb. When it came out that Bill Clinton had to be could not resist a deposition during the course of his presidency in the Clinton case, I thought it was a horrific decision by Justice John Paul Stevens. I think he had no idea that depositions in many cases are every bit as deadly as trials. If the admissions come out, they could lead to all sorts of untoward things. I don't think that should ever happen to a president. What you do is you postpone the statute of limitations. You preserve evidence in documents and writing, but you do not have him engage in any direct activity until he is out of office. People are saying, aha, but the states are still in the wings. I think the protection that the president gets is not only from federal prosecution, but from state prosecution in exactly the same way. I said that 20-odd years ago with Clinton. I'm not going to change my particular views today. I think it's nice that the president has taken the high ground. Do I think it was a witch hunt? It's awfully hard to say that. One of the most galling features about Mr. Mueller is he was a sphinx. And so you never had any idea of what he was doing. There are always two views of sphinxes. One is they're deep and they're profound, and they will never let you know what they know until they want you to know it. And the other is the reason they have a blank face is they got a blank mind, and there's nothing that they actually have to say anyhow, so they might as well look learned, even though it turns out they're totally ignorant. In this particular case, I don't know which it is, but my view was there was nothing whatsoever at any point in this investigation that made the collusion charges wrong. And let me just make one point about how you have to think about the case. The Times and other papers said, well, what this clearly shows is that the Russians engaged in their campaign of disinformation to elect Mr. Trump. Come on. The chances that they, with a couple $100,000 of experiments and some Twitter feeds, without any force on the ground, without any boats, without any polling, anything, can switch an election is preposterous. What they can do is spread enough disinformation so that whoever wins the election will be less legitimate in the eyes of the public, because there'll always be the taint that they colluded with the Russians. And they succeeded absolutely brilliantly on that particular strategy, because everybody went all in for this point. The correct analysis of this case from the beginning was that the Russians have all sorts of motives to go independently. Neither party has any motive whatsoever to work with the Russians directly on this, because they will only get themselves into trouble, and the Russians are going to do what they want to do anyhow. They're not as though they're going to be a reliable partner. So they're just part of the background. We plan our strategies around what they do. They plan their strategies around what we do. But that's not coordination. That's not collusion. That's just essentially the way in which all sorts of political struggles take place. If that counts as collusion, then every time the Democrats do something in response to the Republican, vice versa, maybe these guys are colluding as well. The definition of collusion has to be so broad that it becomes useless. And I think all of this was perfectly apparent the day that this particular thing began, and as the evidence began to leak out about Strzok and all the other kinds of situations with Lisa Page, it became clearer and clearer to me that they absolutely had nothing to go on. I was told the story. Did Michael Cohen go to Prague? No. And I heard allegations that one of the major newspapers that investigated this knew that he was never in Prague, but they never bothered to make it public, because that would essentially undermine the force of this. There were two newspapers that got Pulitzer Prizes on this, the Times and the Post. I think both of them have to return it.
All right. You've been listening to The Libertarian Podcast with Richard Epstein. Remember, you can follow Richard on Twitter at Richard A. Epstein. You can read his weekly column, The Libertarian, by visiting Defining Ideas at Hoover.org. And you can help us out by rating the show on iTunes. For Richard Epstein, I'm Troy Sinek. Thanks for listening.
This podcast has been a production of the Hoover Institution. For more information about our work, please visit Hoover.org.